Good evening, everyone. It's time to take charge of your life. Hello, this is marriage and family therapist Elena Barbaro, your host, inviting you to take charge of your life on WDIY. The theme of this program is that so many events in life happen to us over which we have no control. Our only control is our response to life's situations. It is often said that 90% of life's events happen to us, and 10% is what we make happen. Tonight we talk about how each of us has so many memories. As my guest this evening says in her book, The Handsome Journey, Portraits of Elders Reflecting on Their Life's Journey, our eyes may be windows into the soul, but hands unlock a secret trap door to the same destination. They hold keys to who we are, how we lived, and what we can continue to become. Tonight, my guest is Elaine Zelka, a former nurse and a photographer in Easton, who has authored an outstanding gift to us all. Her book is called The Handsome Journey, Portraits of Elders Reflecting on Their Life's Journey. And interestingly, this beautiful book has no photographs of faces of people. Each story is introduced by a photograph of their hands holding something special that is a symbol of their life story. It is a pleasure to welcome Elaine Zelka, former nurse and gifted photographer, and gifted writer, to take charge of our lives on WDIY. Welcome.
Thank you. Thank you for having me, Ellie.
What inspired you to write this book, Elaine?
The inspiration came from walking around nursing homes. I was in hospice nursing at the time when something triggered. I was walking around nursing homes and listening to people's stories. I would go into their rooms and sit and hold somebody's hand. And I started looking down at their hands and wondering, you know, what did they do for a living? Who did they touch? What was their occupation? Did they make a difference in the world? And I started dabbling into photography at the time. I was contemplating whether to leave nursing or not and do photography. And visually, I became intrigued by the wrinkles in the hands, the beautifully wrinkled hands that I was seeing, and curious about the stories behind them. And I felt that stories need to be told, and sometimes they don't have to be told by, looking at somebody and their facial expressions. Sometimes stories can just be told by listening and holding somebody's hand and seeing where they're from and capturing the essence of truly who they are physically by holding their hands and listening to their stories.
So that you began to see that the hands were an extremely important part of us.
Mm-hmm. It's a physical connection you have with someone, especially in nursing. People, the physical touch, especially in elderly patients, is often lost. People are afraid to give somebody a hug or a pat on the back or a shake of a hand or a squeeze of a hand because they're afraid they're going to hurt them or it's inappropriate or it's something that they don't feel comfortable doing. I find it, for me, it's probably the first thing I do. I love to shake somebody's hands and hold on to them. I had lost my parents in 2006 and 2007, and one of the things that you remember most when somebody is passing away is holding their hand, because sometimes physically it truly is the only thing that they have left. And that visual for me never went away. It's still with me today. I can close my eyes and I can see my mom's hand in mine. Sometimes I look down at my own hand now and I see my mom's hand and how it's changing over the years and it's becoming her hand, which when I was younger I hated, but now I treasure. Because I don't mind getting old. I don't mind the wrinkles coming because I know what my hands have endured so far in my life.
So it sounds like your mother's passing really inspired you mm-hmm. to connect more and to learn more about people's stories.
Absolutely. And it's actually what prompted me to go into hospice nursing. I was doing some nursing at the time before my mom passed away. I was in pharmaceutical sales. I was running my own little jewelry business and things like that on the side. And I had three little girls at home. So I was kind of taking a break, not working full time. And when my mom got sick, those hospice nurses came in and were miracle workers. And I always enjoyed working with elderly patients. Now, my mom was only 62, so it wasn't that she was an elderly patient, but I associated a lot of hospice with some of the elderly because that's what I was witness to in the hospitals. But when they came in, I felt a strong bond with them and what they did for my mom and making our family aware that it's okay to get in bed with her. It's okay to lay down and hug her and hold her hand and be with her. Because even being a nurse, being the daughter at the time, it was very heart-wrenching. It was very confusing what I could do, what I wanted to do. So the hospice part of this, which stemmed into the, you know, the writing of the book afterwards, but working with hospice patients stemmed from my, unfortunately, my mom dying and experiencing that. And I'd give anything to hold her hand again and listen to those stories and be with her. And then unfortunately, I lost my dad 18 months later and very similar situation where his stories just at the very end started to come out and reminisce and things like that. But
when you say his stories began to come out at the very end and reminisce, what do you mean?
About 48 hours before my dad passed away, he, what I like to call, decompressed. My father was a World War II veteran. He was a prisoner of war, and he chose not to talk about it. A lot of people with post-traumatic stress disorder, and I know that by being a psych major previous to being a nurse, so I do have a psych background and a nursing background. And when my father was growing up and when he endured the war, he suppressed it for the rest of his life. Only occasionally he would speak of it, maybe some of the places that he was at in Africa and in Italy and such, but it was really hard for him to talk about. Before he passed away, he literally decompressed and spoke nonstop for about 48 hours. And it was heart-wrenching to listen to because a lot of it was babble, but a lot of it was him reminiscing about his life as a child. He was crying. He was laughing. He was screaming. He was fighting in a war. He was playing with his brothers in South Philadelphia the next moment. He was in school. He was playing with us when we were children. So many stories came out. And I was devastated because some of those stories, as a younger girl at the time, I didn't care about. And I feel guilty. I felt guilty about it. Like, oh, when we're driving in the car, my dad would, you know, drive around and say, oh, I remember this spot. Or I remember doing that as a kid. And I remember that bakery. I used to go in there. And as a child and as a young adult, you blow it off. And now I realized, well, since I wrote the book, even before that, but how important those stories are. They're the treasure of somebody. And I'd give anything to hear those stories again. When I began this project, my goal was to get somebody, all these people's stories. They didn't have to be a prisoner of war. They don't have to be a war hero. They don't have to be an athlete or somebody famous. Everybody has a story to tell.
And I think that is the beautiful essence of this book. Mm-hmm. The photography and the writing and the telling of each person's story is truly soulful. It is so meaningful that every one of us can be inspired to tell and to reminisce and to think about what our story would be. And I want you to talk about Ruth and Jim in your book. Mm-hmm. I believe Ruth and Jim were married for 70 years.
Correct.
And this is a wonderful story, and they haven't been parted, but now they're in a... they're in a nursing home.
Correct.
And tell us, Ruth goes to see him.
She would go. She would go every day to go visit her husband. So when I met Ruth, I was introduced to her because she wanted to show off her knitting. Ruth spent all her years as a younger adult knitting with her delicate fingers, and I was intrigued by them. She had very, very thin hands, and she was sitting there knitting when I met her.
And if you've just tuned in, you're listening to Take Charge of Your Life. This is your host, Elena Barbro. And this evening, we're talking with Elaine Zelka, a former nurse, a photographer, and a wonderful author of The Handsome Journey, Portraits of Elders Reflecting on Their Life's Journeys. And you were just talking about Ruth and her husband, Jim, who were married for 70 years. And they are living now in assisted living or something of that sort. Tell
sure.
us about.
Ruth and Jim, they got married in 1941. And when I first heard that, I was curious. I wonder what was this, what was the success of their marriage? How did that work? And so I wanted to talk to them. I knew that they were in the nursing home for about 10 years when I met them. So they were living there together for about 10 years, and they did live together in the nursing home. I believe they started in an assisted living. They started to fail, you know, his health started to fail a little bit, and for the first time after 70 years, they were separated. He had to move up to the third floor, and she remained on the second floor. But every day, every meal, she would meet up with him and still want to take care of him. But going back to the ham project, she was sitting there knitting when I met her, and she had very, very frail hands, to the point where you were almost afraid to actually hold on to them because they looked very frail and possibly very arthritic, and I thought maybe she'd be in pain. But yet she was knitting a mile a minute, and it's like it was so innate to her to be knitting, and it was her calming, soothing thing that she did every day. She always had a blanket on her. She was always making baby shoes. She was always making blankets. When I met her, we were in her room, and she reminisced a little bit about her past, what was the success of her marriage, how they did everything together. They lived through the Depression, so she began knitting because it was the thing to do to keep warm. She was like, if I'm going to keep warm and keep my children warm, I better start knitting some blankets. And that's what started her, quote, career, her job in knitting. She took care of many children throughout her year. She worked in the Girl Scouts as a leader. She also worked with the Red Cross as a volunteer. And her husband became avid fly fishermen. And those delicate, beautiful hands made the most beautiful flies for the fishing that she had on her walls when I was in there. So again, another thing that those hands did in a lifetime. And through all that, she felt like she never had a job. She felt like, oh, I was just a stay-at-home mom. And yet I'm pulling all these gems out of her just by speaking to her, that she was an avid volunteer. She worked with the Red Cross. She worked with Girl Scouts of America. And to this day, every day, she still went up and took care of her husband. Those beautiful hands caressed him, held his hand, and made him feel connected to her till the day he died. I remember going up and sitting with them at the lunch table. So her and I went up together to the third floor and sat with Jim. And it was really hard for him to communicate, but she was right there, Ruth, finishing his sentences and answering for him. And he was totally okay with that. You could tell he was smiling at her. They still looked at each other with the twinkle in their eyes. And she still took care of them. She helped him eat and take care of him. And that was their story. It was a love story. And it's just drawing out that she still, and I'm sorry, and I should say that she still had her knitting in her lap as this was happening. So she would sit there and chat with me. And I think maybe it was her nervous energy or it was just part of her, but her hands never sat idle.
And she's still able.
Absolutely.
Able to smile at her husband lovingly.
Absolutely.
And so that there was always that smile of understanding between them as she knitted her way to productivity.
Absolutely.
And we're going to talk more about The Handsome Journey, Portraits of Elders Reflecting on Their Life's Journey, when we return to Take Charge of Your Life on WDIY.
Do you have a car that you're trading in? How about an old truck or boat that's taking up space? Let WDIY help you get rid of unwanted vehicles and turn them into financial support for the station. It's a simple and easy process. We handle all the towing, title, and transfer, and you receive a tax deduction. Turn your vehicle into the programs you love on WDIY. To learn more, visit WDIY.org or call 610-694-8100, extension 7.
For over 35 years, Godfrey Daniels has presented a variety of folk and acoustic music on Bethlehem's South Side. Listen to Live from Godfrey Daniels as we bring you in the door and put you right in the front row with recordings of your favorite shows, plus lots of studio tracks from Godfrey's artists, past, present, and future. Join us on Tuesday from 7 to 9 for Live from Godfrey Daniels on WDIY Allentown.
Welcome back to Take Charge of Your Life. Hello, this is Eleanor Bobro, your host. And this evening we're talking with a most interesting guest who has written a beautiful book called Handsome Journey, Portraits of Elders, Reflecting on Their Life's Journey. And my guest this evening is Elaine Zelka, a former nurse and photographer, and now the author of this very beautiful book. And you are presently a photographer.
Correct.
And you have your own business
studio. Mm-hmm.
in Easton.
Correct. I chose to go into full-time photography about 5 or 6 years ago. It was a very hard decision for me to make. I enjoyed being a nurse, but there was this artist in me that was there for many, many years. Even back when I was at Rutgers, I took some photography classes, but I felt like back then I couldn't be a photographer. It was, you know, my parents were very old-fashioned, where being a photographer was a dream job. That's not something you do for a living. So go into nursing or go be a secretary. And, you know, my dad was very old-fashioned. He was a lot older than my mom. So I grew up in a very old-fashioned Italian household where I wouldn't dream of doing something artistic. And it's funny because in this book, I'm finding many women experiencing the same thing. And they're finding their crafts again at age 70, 80, 90 years old, where they're picking up that paintbrush again because they dreamed of doing it when they were 20. And it's amazing. And so I'm so happy that I can combine my photography with my old nursing skills and sit with these patients and elderly patients and be comfortable with them, because it's what I did for a living. And now combining them is a dream come true.
So when you go, tell us how you go about gathering the stories.
Okay.
Do you go in with your camera at the first, you know, mm-hmm. ready? Or tell us how you warm up the people,
okay.
and let them, you know, get them ready for...
Understand what they're getting into.
Exactly.
It really depends. It depends on a facility where I'm going to, or if I'm going to somebody's home. So I find participants for this, whether they're in assisted livings or nursing homes, or it can be a friend's grandmother that has a story to tell. So I believe everybody has a story to tell. So for example, if I do something at an assisted living, I may get in touch with the community's the activity director and explain my project. And I may go in the first day and sit in front of a group of maybe 10 or 20 people and go over the story, do a presentation with the staff, with the public, with the residents that actually live there. And then from that, I usually get volunteers that want to actually do the project. So they're intrigued by it, or they want to participate. They have a story to tell. So sometimes I get them that way. Then I'll meet with them individually. When I do the stories, I like to spend an hour or so with the participant to understand who they are as a person. The picture comes last. That's the easier part for me. It's really the interview that I sit with and hold their hands and talk with them to really get the gist of who they are. The most important question I ask them, and it usually comes later on in the interview, is if you were to choose one object that represents your journey, what would it be and why? And a lot of times people either know it right off the bat, or it stumps them, and they really have to think about what is the one object that represents who I am as a person.
Well, mm-hmm. it's interesting that on the cover of the book, you have here lovely hands with a drink.
Correct.
And I think there's a cherry going yep. in.
Well, this is a martini. Oh, it's a martini, and there's three olives in there.
Oh, three olives, okay.
That would be Thelma. Thelma was 97 years old when I met her. She was living in one of the nursing homes, stumbling here. And when I met her, she was actually on hospice at the time. And not all the participants in the book are on hospice. A lot of them are just later in their lives. My youngest one is 46, so it really depends on where they are in their life. When I met Thelma, she was sitting in her bed, and she was probably about 80 pounds. She was wearing clothes that are a lot too big for her, sitting in her blue Jerry chair. And I describe that everything in the book about what it looked like in the room. And the significance of sitting there in a room now with three other roommates, and I enter her 8x8 square foot area.
Mm.
And that's very significant. And I talk about that in the book. And I announce myself when I come in, and she invites me in. And it's her home now. This is where she's been living for the last 15, 20 years in the nursing home. So I sit with her. I'm like, Thelma, and I would hold her hands, and she had the most beautiful, tiny, little arthritic hands. And I instantly thought, like, what did she do for a living? Like, I wonder how many kids she had and this and that. And, you know, who did she hold? What did she do? So she started talking to me and how she was kind of unhappy most of her life because she had to work as a seamstress in a factory. And she felt like that's what made her hands all gnarled. And I still felt they were beautiful. I'm like, well, you know what, Thelma, tell me something more about you that maybe somebody doesn't know about. What is it about Thelma that you would want somebody to know about you at 97 years old? And she closed her eyes for a little bit, and she says, well, did you know I used to be a barkeeper? I'm like, really? She says, well, back in the 20s, her husband and her owned a bar in Allentown, Pennsylvania. And this is where it really got me and where I felt the significance of asking that question. She said, I would hold a martini. And I said, well, why? She goes, because it reminded me of a time when I had a job where I could talk to people and people appreciated me. Because after that, it didn't happen anymore. We went into the depression, and I worked in a factory the rest of my life. But when I close my eyes and think of me, I don't think of me sitting here in a nursing home with three other roommates. I think of me behind that bar laughing with my patrons, holding a martini in my hand. And I was overwhelmed. And that's why I felt like this project is going to be so important to do. And she was the first one, and I'll never forget my first.
And she inspired you to, did she inspire you to photograph hands?
Well, no, because I knew that I was focused on her hands, because I did ask that significant question. What would you hold, Thelma? I'd love to photograph you holding the one object that represents your journey. And what would it be? And she chose the martini. All the photographs are in black and white. They're very detail-oriented. I try to incorporate both hands in the photo to capture their true essence. And she's holding a martini in one hand and the olives in the second, and she's dipping those olives in there. The funny part is I actually got an order for her to get one martini per week as needed by her doctor.
You made that happen?
Yes, I did. And she took it up, and once a week she had her martini. It was vodka. I mean, I'm sorry, it was gin, never vodka. And unfortunately, Thelma passed away about a year later. And her picture hung above her bed ever since I came in and met her that day. And I would still go and visit her, and I would say, hey, Thelma, do you remember me? She's like, yep, you're the photographer with the martini. And she always thought I would bring a martini with me when I came in, but I never did. But the doctor did get her an order.
That was wonderful because you facilitated that.
Absolutely.
Yes, and you made her last year's special.
Good to the last drop.
Absolutely, good to the last drop. And, you know, by the way, if people want to get in touch with you,
sure,
maybe they have somebody that they know or would like to have a story captured.
Absolutely.
How would they get in touch with you?
Well, I have a website. On the website,
what is the website?
It is www.thehandsomejourney.com. It's all one word, The Handsome Journey. On there, you can see all about the project. You can purchase the book on there as well if you wanted to get a copy of the book yourself, which I will sign for you. It's also available on Amazon and on Barnes & Noble under Elaine Zelker, The Handsome Journey. But I'd love to get more participants. I am working on the second book, which is going to be coming out when I have enough stories to share. And I'm looking for people on all walks of life. You don't have to be on hospice. It could be somebody in their final stages of life. I chose to do the elderly because they are walking a longer journey than we have. Well, you can find me at info@thehandsomejourney.com or through my actual photography site, Elaine Zelker Photography. You can reach me through there as well.
And they can also find you in the phone book. Is that right?
I would assume so. I don't really use a phone book anymore, but online on the web you can look up Elaine Zelker. I'm sure you'll be able to find me.
Very good. Okay. Now, you know, you did mention that you did not only focus on older people, and there is a very touching story about a very young man.
Yes,
Keith. Can you tell us about him?
I met Keith when he was 45 years old. I met him at the cancer support community in Bethlehem when I was actually doing the program there. I was talking about this was before the book came out, and I go around to different agencies and I do speaking engagements on this project, The Handsome Journey. And Keith was one of the audience members, and he came up to me afterwards and he wanted to meet me. He loved the idea of the project, and I was curious as why he was there at the cancer support. And he said, well, I'm actually in remission right now and I'm feeling really good. And
how old was he at the time?
I think he was about 45 at the time.
Mm-hmm.
And he said, I got cancer when I was 42. And since then, I've been going through a divorce. And unfortunately, I actually had to move back in with my parents outside of Allentown, a few miles outside of Allentown. I'm like, oh, that's okay. We were chatting about things and we hit it off. And he just truly enjoyed what I was doing for the people and for the elderly for this project. He always encouraged people to talk about their legacy, especially because he was touched with cancer himself. So long story short, about 8 months go by and I did lose touch with Keith. And about 50 miles apart, I went up to East Stroudsburg University and was doing the program up there with nursing students. And at the end of the program, this young, beautiful blonde came up to me, and she was a little bit upset, and she was crying a little bit. She goes, well, I have a favor to ask of you. I have an uncle that is dying. But he's only 46 years old, and he lives with my grandparents, and he's outside of Allentown. I stopped her. I'm like, wait a minute. He's 46 years old. He's got liver cancer. He's living with his parents outside of Allentown. I'm like, is his name Keith? And she almost fell over. But it was the same Keith that I met 8 months ago. And she ran out of the room, and she went to her dorm room and called home, and she wanted to see if it was okay if I went and met with him. And I met him the next day. I went to him right away, and unfortunately, Keith was in his final stages. And I sat with him, and I did the project with him, and I photographed him holding Chinese exercise balls. It is something that was very physical for him. It was the only physical that he had left. And I did meet with him, and I got his beautiful story that talked about legacy and his journey as a 46-year-old.
Well, I want to thank you, Elaine Zelka, for helping us to take charge of our lives by understanding, as you put it so beautifully in your book, The Handsome Journey, Portrait of Elders Reflecting on Their Life's Journey. Our personal legacy is created day after day. It is a part of us that will be left in the minds and the hearts of people that we leave behind. The goal is not to live forever. The goal is to create memories that you see. We are all the same. We all end in death. However, this book is not about death. It is about life and the one worth living. It's about the one worth telling. Thinking about our legacy may remind us of the end, but if you make the journey memorable, meaningful, and one worth talking about, you will live forever. Stories are important. They mean something to someone, somewhere. We all have them. And that is in Elaine Zelker's final pages of her book. And I want to say thank you, Elaine Zelka, for providing us with such an inspiring book to make our memories meaningful and to let and share those memories with people. And if they want to get in touch with you,
thehandsomejourney.com or info@thehandsomejourney.com.
Thank you again for listening. Thank you, Neil Heaver, producer. See you all on the radio next Monday evening at 6:30 p.m. when I again invite you to take charge of your life on WDIY.